Dads, this is your day. You know, we make a great deal about Mother's Day, and sometimes Dad's Day can just get, not forgotten, but glossed over a little bit. So this morning, we really want to focus on you, Dads, if you'll allow us that opportunity, all right? I know what you're thinking. Oh, no. He's going to do some magic card tricks. I can't do any magic card tricks. I'm not a magician. Although there have been times when I wished I had a wand and I could magically wave away my children's problems. There have been times when I wished I was a magician and I had a wand and I could magically wave it and all of a sudden my kids would be spiritually healthy. But that's not the way it works, is it? It's not the way it works at all. So you're wondering, why does he have a deck of cards? Well, I wonder if you men who are dads, if you'd all just stand where you are for a moment. And we've got something for you. You know, we usually give the women flowers on Mother's Day. We're giving you a playing card. Each one of you gets a playing card. And when everybody has received one, then we'll be seated. Oh, you can look at it, yeah. This is a guy who's played cards before, all right? They're coming. Probably wondering, what is this all about? All right, Dads, when you've got a card, you can be seated. Hold on to the card. Now, you should be taking one, even if you were here in the first service and you already took one. So, did you do that, guys? Those of you who were in the first service? All right. You know, when I went to Christian college, we used to have to sign a pledge. We wouldn't go to the movies. We wouldn't dance, wouldn't play cards. Crazy, huh? I always wondered, why didn't they have on that pledge, I won't lie, I won't cheat, I won't, you know, be sexually impure, I won't, you know, just a few lesser important things. but they didn't. And when you went to these Christian schools and you couldn't play cards or that kind of thing, they made an exception. You could play Rook or Uno. And then somebody else mentioned at the last service there's some other card game, I guess, that you can play if you're a Christian. Euchre. What is it?
Euchre.
Euchre. Somebody's going to have to teach me how to play that. All right. Well, where are we headed with all of this stuff? Let's turn to the scriptures, okay? And let's look at what it says in 1 Thessalonians chapter 2. And verses 10 through 12. Now, I'm using the NIV, and this is why it all occurred to me. All right, I saw a word or words there that I thought to myself, okay, this is what we can sort of zoom in on for the men in our fellowship on Father's Day. So let's look at 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, verses 10 through 12. You are witnesses, and so is God, of how holy, righteous, and blameless we were among you who believed. For you know that we dealt with each of you, get that, we dealt, you got it? We dealt with each of you as a father deals, you got that, deals with his own children, encouraging, comforting, and urging you to live lives worthy of God who calls you into his kingdom and glory. Now, as a father dealt with his own children and deals with them, you're only going to find it that way in the NIV. In most of the other translations, it says as a father behaves toward his children. It's talking about how you handle the relationship between father and children. But I liked that word dealt that the NIV used. And I want to give you the setting. I want to give you the background circumstances, if I could, here for what Paul is saying. You see, because Paul was harshly, unfairly, in fact, criticized. It was being said that his visit to Thessalonica was a failure. If you look back in chapter 2, just the first verse there, it says, "You know, brothers, that our visit to you was not a failure." Some translations say, "in vain." Was not a failure. He's defending himself. It was being said that his visit accomplished nothing when he went to the church at Thessalonica. It was being said that he was in error, but that isn't the case. Paul spoke the truth to these folks in Thessalonica. It was said that he was impure in his motives. If you follow the chapter, you'll see that. But his motives were not impure. They were suggesting that his motivation was greed. Nothing could be further from the truth than that. Went on and he said, "Look, we didn't use trickery to get converts. We did not use guile, as some of the translations would suggest, methods of deception to trap or to catch another." The word used there is like bait in fishing. We didn't do that. Paul said, "We did none of that, myself or my companions that have come to serve you with the word of God. We did none of that. We weren't trying to please men," he goes on and he says, if you look further on in the chapter here, "but God. And we never used flattery." In fact, he goes on and he says, "We refused to be a burden to you. And we acted gently," almost like a nursing mom. Verse 7, "gently, like a mom, we acted and we spoke to you. And then we shared our lives with you." Verse 8, do you see it there? We shared, in other words, our lives were like an open book before you. There's nothing hidden. There's nothing secretive. There's nothing manipulative. There's nothing that we're doing that's covert in order to gain your allegiance to us. No, not at all. Why did Paul need to be so defensive? Why would the Thessalonians suggest that his visit there was a failure or in vain? What preceded this? Well, the answer to that is found in Acts chapter 16. If you look in Acts chapter 16, you'll see that Paul made a visit to Philippi. And that visit was of mixed success, you might say. So you turn over in Acts chapter 16, and you see, first of all, when he visited Philippi, he was delighted with the conversion of Lydia, a dealer in purple cloth. Then, as the time there in Philippi continued, it happened that a spirit-possessed slave girl was delivered from the evil spirits that possessed her. And that really troubled her owners because they'd no longer make a profit from her. And so they seized Paul and Silas, and they brought them before the magistrates. And there they were stripped, and they were beaten, and they were ultimately thrown into prison. Can you imagine that? Stripped and beaten and thrown into prison, humiliated, treated so brutally. But in prison, at around midnight, as they were singing hymns, what happened? There was an earthquake, and the prison doors opened. And that gave them opportunity to escape. The jailer, certain that they had escaped, was about to kill himself because his life was on the line if that had happened. And Paul cried out and said, "No, don't harm yourself. Don't harm yourself. We're still here." And the jailer couldn't understand why would they still be in prison when the prison doors had fallen open and they could have escaped and didn't. What accounts for that? So Paul proceeded to explain the gospel to this jailer. The jailer accepted Christ as his Savior and his Lord. He brought Paul and Silas to his home, and the whole household, we're told, was baptized. Well, it became known that Paul and Silas were Roman citizens, and they'd been treated unjustly. And so the magistrates felt that what they ought to do is they should send representatives to Paul and Silas in prison and apologize to them and set them free and send them on their way. Paul said, no, you publicly stripped, beat, and humiliated us prior to sending us here to prison. We want you to come personally and apologize to us and escort us out of town. And that's exactly what happened. And it tells us that what they did was they left Philippi and they went to Thessalonica. So Paul comes with a whole history. And the Thessalonians and those who were there to be critical of Paul were quick to do so. He was maligned, he was misunderstood, he was certainly opposed and unappreciated, beaten up, misunderstood, and unappreciated. Is that a description of dads? Sometimes it is. Sometimes it is. And dads, it might cause you to say to yourself, why do I bother? Have you ever heard yourself saying that? Why do I bother? Am I getting anywhere? Am I speaking to stone walls or what? Why can't I get through? I just feel like quitting. I just feel like quitting. But not Paul, not Silas. They went on to Thessalonica. And here in his letter to the Thessalonians, reviewing that time in his life, Paul talks about two things, and they really relate to a dad. Because he likens his ministry to parenting. Both a mom and her gentleness, and a dad in his witness and work. So let's talk about his witness and his work for just a few moments. What kind of a spiritual leader was Paul? Well, first of all, in verse 7, it says that he was gentle, like a nursing mom. Gentle. You know, dads, it's okay. It's important, in fact, that we be sensitive and gentle in raising our children. It shouldn't just be mom who is nurturing. Dads, we've got to be nurturing in our manner as well. That's part of our witness to our kids. And then, Paul says here, and you'll see it in verse 10, that he described himself and his companions as holy and righteous and blameless. Do you see it? Holy and righteous and blameless. You put it this way, devout toward God, just in his relations with others, and in fact, blameless as he thought about himself. He had a clear conscience about his manner of living. One commentator said, you take those three words, holy and righteous and blameless, and you put them together and you've got really one word that is so important and that is increasingly missing in our society, the word integrity. Integrity. So part of Paul's witness was that he was gentle, like a nursing mom as a spiritual leader. He was a man of integrity before those that God gave him to influence and affect as a spiritual leader. And then we've already seen how he was persevering. You know, it would be very easy to quit when you've endured the kind of hardship, the kind of trouble that Paul encountered as an apostle of the Lord's. But he persevered. He pressed on. When he left Philippi, he didn't say, "I've had it. I'm going home. Silas, let's get out of here. Silas, let's pack it all in. What's the worth of it all?" No, he pressed on. And on he went to Thessalonica. Gentle like a mom. One of integrity. Holy, righteous, blameless. You know, it would be so easy to sell out integrity for the sake of comfort. Happens all the time. All the time we sell out integrity for the sake of comfort. Well, I just didn't want to stand out. I didn't want to be different from the crowd. Dads, we can be guilty of that very easily. Go with the guys, do what the guys do, rather than holding on to integrity in our living and persevering. That was Paul's witness. That was Paul's witness of first and foremost importance, the example that Paul set as a spiritual leader. The example, Dad, that you set before your children, your witness. Is it gentle? Is it one of integrity? Is it one of perseverance? But more than the witness, Paul then goes on to describe his work as a spiritual leader. Verse 12. You see it there? There's three participles in that verse. Encouraging, comforting, and urging, as the NIV puts it. Encouraging, comforting, and urging, according to the NIV. Let's look at those participles, because those participles comprise the work of a dad as well as a spiritual leader. Encouraging, well, that kind of means to come alongside, to move in a specific way, to help someone move in a specific way. Come alongside that person, not just send them out to do it, but come alongside them. Probably the best word to describe what Paul is talking about here is instruct. Dads, it's our responsibility to instruct our children in the way they should go. We saw the verse from Proverbs, didn't we, on the screen earlier. It is our responsibility to encourage through instruction. You know, one of the biggest potholes in life that we fall into and that harms us and hurts us is oftentimes ignorance, not knowing what we should do, and just moving in darkness and ignorance. So our responsibility, dads, is to instruct, to encourage with instruction. And we do this in the manner of our witness, of our example. And that's important in each one of these responsibilities that we have to our children, that our witness be employed. In other words, we've got to instruct with gentleness, not harshness. Do it. I told you once, didn't I? What about perseverance? We kind of give up. We instruct and we think that's sufficient when we tell them once. An educational principle is repetition, 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 repetition. and through repetition. Our kids oftentimes learn. Don't give up. Be gentle. Be one of integrity in your encouragement to your kids. And that's whether our kids are little tykes or whether they're grown adults. We can still instruct. We can still encourage. The second responsibility that we have there is comforting. And that's promoting peace or wholeness, security, so that the will to continue is still there in our children. Probably the best word to define what he means here by comfort is motivation. To motivate, to coach them. Come on, you can do it. I know you can do it. Look, you're doing it. Great effort. Keep it up. We need to motivate our kids so that they are comforted. A mom, she kind of focuses on safety and security and love. Dad, your role is to focus on that self-confidence so that your child becomes independent and the best motivator of all is grace. Grace, that's the best motivation there is, to be gracious toward your kids. Don't forgo the responsibility, Dad, of comforting, motivating your child, your children. The third role or responsibility that Paul lists as one of a spiritual leader toward his church is urging, commanding, and the best word probably for that is disciplining them. Ray Pritchard says this. He says, "We tell them no now, so they will tell themselves no later." Again, it fits right with this whole idea of encouraging and comforting. Discipline with consistency. Consistency is so hard. That was one of the hardest things for me personally. As a dad, was to be consistent. I would see the odds that they were up against at times, and I would think I've got to let go. I've got to maybe not follow through the way I should. And I would think erroneously and wrong. When our kids were growing up, we would spank on an occasion when they required some kind of discipline. We'd never ever use anything but our hands, and we would always spank on the bottom. And I can tell you one time, for instance, when our kids were really unruly and disrespectful and difficult, our two sons, as a matter of fact. And so we said, go on up to the bedroom, and you're going to get a spanking. So they went up to the bedroom, and shortly after that, Paula and I followed, and we said, okay, on the bed, lean over on the bed, and we're going to administer a spanking. And so they were in their pajamas, and they leaned over on the bed, these two guys, and what did we see but these square pajama bottoms. They had both taken books and put them in their pajamas, and we burst out into laughing. But that doesn't really help with consistency, if you know what I'm saying. There are times when I failed miserably, and I don't apologize for that time, but it was difficult. Maybe you find it difficult to be consistent in discipline, but it's important. It's really important. So urging and comforting and encouraging in a manner that befits your example, your witness. The result that we're looking for is found in verse 12. Do you see what verse 12 says there? That they might live lives worthy of God who calls you into his kingdom and glory. We want children who will honor and who will serve God. We want children who reflect his ways and do his will. That's our heartbeat. That's our objective. That's our goal as parents, and specifically this morning, dads. Let me share some considerations from the passage for you. This passage is all about spiritual leadership. Paul's spiritual leadership and his fellow laborers. And he speaks about the kind of spiritual leadership that I suggest to you Crossroads must seek in its next pastor. Gentle, having integrity, and perseverance. Encouraging by instruction. Comforting each of us with motivation. And urging us with consistent discipline. The kind of pastor who will not quit. The kind of pastor who, when he suggests something that maybe doesn't fly, will take a step back and say, okay, now, that didn't fly. Why? How can we proceed forward from this point? Let's talk. Let's find some other ways that we can approach this issue. That's the kind of thing that I believe Paul would have done. We need spiritual leadership that has integrity, that has perseverance, and that is gentle, that encourages, that comforts, that urges us forward. It's what a spiritual leader does. It's what a parent does. It's what a dad does. The object is to give the world a good hand, to hopefully improve itself. Do you remember when you first became a dad? And you said to yourself, I really want to do anything I can to make this world a better place. Well, that's a good thing. That's a good objective. That's a good goal to have. But it's not enough if you're a believer. It isn't enough if you're a believer. If you're a believer, you want to add to that. You want something even more than that. You want something before that. You want to give to God the next generation. So, I guess that we need to understand how important it is. Somebody may object to us likening our children to a piece of cardboard with print on it, an inanimate object like that. But this morning, it's an illustration for us. And it's not foreign to what the scripture does. If you look back in Psalms chapter 127, verse 4, children are likened to a piece of wood, a long piece of wood, with a tip on it, an arrow. And God says, it's good when our quiver is full. And what is an arrow intended to do? An arrow is intended to be sent out, isn't it? To be shot into the world. My friends, dads, our kids are intended to be given to the world. More importantly, to God. That's what we want to do. So dads, what are you giving the world to work with? By the way you deal with your kids. Dads, what kind of a winning hand are you dealing God when you raise your kids through your witness and your work as it is right now? Dads, I'm going to ask you to do something. I'm going to ask you to write the names of your children on the card that you've been given. Would you just do that right now? Write the names of your children on that card. Take some of us a little bit longer than others. Our quiver is a little bit fatter. Dad, some of us still carry wallets. This is so thick, but you know what? It's full of membership cards everywhere. Take that card on which you've written the names of your children and tuck it in your wallet as a reminder. Would you do that? That the way you deal with them, what you're dealing in your witness and your work gives the world an opportunity to be a better place. Most importantly, it is hopefully giving God a winning hand in the next generation, and that's what you want. Dad, it's your deal. It's your deal. Now, I wonder, Dads, if you would just look at that card one more time. You might have to take it out of your wallet now that you put it in. And, you know, moms, on Mother's Day, we give them flowers. Because I think all women like flowers. I could be mistaken. There's probably an exception here or there. But men aren't like that. I guess they're more diversified or something in some respects, because I couldn't think of anything that was common that all men seem to like. I mean, there are some men who like golf, and I thought, well, you know, we could buy a brand new set of clubs for every guy that's here in the church. There are some men that like football, and we could, you know, buy him a season's pass to the Patriots, you know, game. But for every guy in the church, it would be a little bit exorbitant. You get the picture. Some men like fishing, but you know, we couldn't send them on a fishing trip out of Boston. Not everybody. So we thought, how can we help the men? How can we give the men something special? So what we're going to do is take that card. If I call out a card that you have, let us know, okay? And we've got something for you. We have to give something to one prize dad, if you want to put it that way, okay? You're all winners, but I'm sure your kids have said that. Oh, you're a real winner, Dad. My kids have said that to me. Oh, yeah, you're a real winner, Dad. But let's give something to the prize dad. How about King of Hearts? Any dad got that? All right. Bob, would you come on up? Bob, you're our prize dad, okay? Here's a $5 gift certificate to Dunkin' Donuts. All dads like coffee, right? Or something like that. Good. God bless.